thank Rabbi Axelrod for being here. I want to thank him very much for those very, very kind words. I thank Rabbi Shai Schechter, who a few months ago was the one who initiated and extended the invitation. And most importantly, with all due respect to the rabbis, I thank you for being here. It is a variation of the age-old riddle: if you give a shir and no one comes, did you really give a shir? So to give a shir on a Sunday morning and to have, Baruch Hashem, such a mechubad crowd, it's really a testimony to the incredible kehila that you have here and the centrality of Torah learning that has been always in Woodmere, but I think certainly, like so many other communities, is growing and growing, and it should continue to grow, l'shem ul'tiferes. When Rabbi Schechter reached out to me and asked me to speak, he was already way ahead of me, and he was aware of the fact that I'd be in America around Asar B'Tevis. And he suggested that I pick that super interesting, exciting topic of Asar B'Tevis, which was sure to draw the big crowd, and he was obviously right. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, I say this with all due respect, this is why we're all here, that it's unfortunate, but the reality is that Asar B'Tevis is unquestionably the least known and certainly the least appreciated of all the fasts. Working off of a famous comment in the Zohar, Rav Soloveitchik said in a drasha, and it's incorporated in some of the svarim, for example, about Hanukkah that have been published posthumously, that even holidays, said Rav Soloveitchik, need mazel. And his point in that context was that Hanukkah had mazel. Right? So the Seder has mazel. And there are other holidays that didn't have mazel. So he doesn't mention Asar B'Tevis, but the reality is, if you think about it for more than a moment, it's missing two different things which could have given it mazel. It's not part of Tkufas Tshuva the way Tzom Gedalia is. So Tzom Gedalia is also a quote-unquote minor fast, but it's between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. How could you not, even if you don't know exactly who Gedalia was, every year we have to remind ourselves, but Tzom Gedalia, everyone knows. And of course, more dramatically, Asar B'Tevis is not part of the Tkufas Chorban. It's not part of the 3 weeks. Even though historically it's, of course, linked. But because it doesn't have that mazel of being a part of either one of those calendaric cycles, it's simply overlooked. It has the benefit of being the shortest fast. So thank God for small things. But nevertheless, before you know it, the fast is over. It's in November. It's in December. It's cold. It's short. And what is it doing anyway? So because of all of this, I thank all of you for being here. This is a great opportunity for us to really learn about and appreciate not only the historical significance, but more importantly, the halachic and the hashkafic significance of what I think is the fast that we know least about. I'll just begin with one word of introduction, which is actually not a source on your sheet, but as many of you know, in Tanakh, there's a very, very famous pasuk in the Navi Zechariah in Perek Ches, which outlines the four fasts that were instituted to commemorate and to mourn the destruction of the Batei Mikdash. And they're referred to in this very famous pasuk in an interesting way, which is going to end up coming back to being one of the crucial parts of our shir. But in general, not speaking specifically about Asar B'Tevis, but the Navi there tells us that there will be these four fasts: the Tzom HaRevi'i, Chamishi, HaShvi'i, V'Tzom HaAsiri. And these are references to the months, starting from Nisan, the months in which these four fasts will take place. So the Tzom HaRevi'i is Shavasar B'Tamuz, the Tzom HaChamishi is Tisha B'Av, the Tzom HaShvi'i is Tzom Gedalia, and the Tzom HaAsiri is Asar B'Tevis. The Asiri is not because it's on the 10th of Tevis. It's because from Nisan, so Tevis is the 10th month. The question is, what even happened on Asar B'Tevis? Those of you who are learning Daf Yomi, we just had the Dapim here at the end of the Masechet to describe the various famous events, infamous and tragic events that took place on Shavuos B'Tamuz. Of course, Tisha B'Av we know. What even happened on Asar B'Tevis? And the truth is that the Nevi'im, in three parallel sources, tell us consistently and exactly what happened on Asar B'Tevis, and those are the first three sources on your sheet. The psukim in Malachim Bet, source number one, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Tet, are basically synonymous, basically carbon copies of each other. And in both cases, we'll just read for the sake of placement, the first source on your sheet, the Navi there describes in the ninth year of the rule of the king, which if in Pasuk, in the second source it mentions this is the Melech Tzidkiyahu, Melech Yehuda. So the Navi tells us, B'chodesh Ha'asiri, in the 10th month, in Teves, Ba'asor L'chodesh, on the 10th of the month, Ba'an Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, Hu V'chol Chelo Al Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar, this is of course talking about in the period before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. If it's in the easy way to remember, if it's in anywhere in Tanakh, that's the first Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was post-Tanakh. So, describing the period before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, which we know Bavel were the ones who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, so Nebuchadnezzar, the famous, infamous enemy of the Jewish people, he began his siege around Yerushalayim and Asar HaBeteves. That's even more explicit in source number 2. If you see at the end of the first line, when it describes that he and his army came on Yerushalayim, and it says specifically, V'yitzaru Aleha. They laid siege to Yerushalayim. Both of those, in source number 1, you see that in Pasuk Bet, V'tavu Ha'ir B'metzor. They besieged, they surrounded the city. If you look at the continuation of the Pesukim, especially in the second source, describe the process. If you look at Pasuk Bet in the second source, in the Navi Yirmiyahu, he goes on to explain how long this lasted. Until the Havka Ha'ir, they finally penetrated, they broke through the walls of Yerushalayim, which we know was Shiv Asar Batamos. 3 weeks later, Tisha B'Av comes the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but they broke through the walls on Shiv Asar Batamos. But it wasn't just due the months in 1 year from Asar B'Tevis. You're already thinking about summer vacation, before the 3 weeks, after the 3 weeks, how many months till I have to worry about that? In fact, if you take a look at the way the psukim there describe the years of the king, in fact, the siege was 2.5 years or so. 2.5 years siege of Yerushalayim, which eventually culminates in breaching the walls on Shiv Asar Batamos, which eventually culminates in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av. So even though, as we mentioned, calendarically, Asar B'Tevis does not fall out anywhere near the Tkufas HaChurban, as I refer to it, the three-week period, which we're more familiar with. But in fact, as a phenomenon, as a historical narrative, what is it that we're commemorating? What is it that we're hopefully mourning? Why are we fasting Asar B'Tevis? And the answer, Bigadol, is the same reasons we fast on Shiv Asar Batamos and Tisha B'Av. This is connected to the Churban. This is part of the ramp-up to the Churban. In fact, it's the first step and what eventually led to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Now what's fascinating, and I want to call your attention to this, and again, we're going to come back to this in a few moments, but what's fascinating, and then again, for those of you who are students of Tanakh, you know this, that often you have multiple svarim of Tanakh describing the same event from different perspectives. So on the one hand, we see even Melachim Bet in Yirmiyahu, but we know one from the perspective of the king, one perspective of the Navi. But in fact, really fascinating is source number 3, which is the Navi Yechezkel, who's already in Bavel. And yet, while in Bavel, Yechezkel gets a nevuah that tells him about what's happening with the siege in Yerushalayim. Source number 3. Which we now know, that description of those dates, and that year of the king, in the 10th month, on the 10th day, is the same exact date that we just saw referenced. Pasuk Bet, Ben Adam, interesting phrase which we're not going to be focusing on, but he describes the Navi, Ben Adam, right? Ketav lecha, ketuv lecha, he tells the Navi, I want you to write this down, as shame hayom, as etzem hayom azeh, on that very day, samach belch bavel el Yerushalayim, etzem hayom azeh, repeating it a second time. On that very day, he tells Yechezkel, write it down, for posterity, in your nevuah, melech bavel has laid siege to Yerushalayim. So this is the answer to the first mystery. Why are we fasting? What is Asar B'Tevis all about? And the answer is quite simple. When it comes to Shiv Asar Batamos and Tisha B'Av, we recall, whether it's from Daf Yomi or from our summer camp days, that's another one of the mazels that Shiva Asur B'Tamas and Tisha B'Av had, that because they're in the summer, we know that one of the great drivers of all chinuch for generations already is summer camps. So, right, any of you who went to summer camp probably can acknowledge that probably the most meaningful Tisha B'Avs you had were, shall we say, when you were younger. Right, camp knows how to do Tisha B'Av far greater than, unfortunately, most of us do as adults. So that event, Shiva Asur B'Tamas, Tisha B'Av, so the Gemara itself tells us, right, how many different, five different things happened, this many different things happened. Asur B'Tavis, one thing happened. One thing happened Asur B'Tavis. In the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, Melech Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, began the siege, which 2.5 years later eventually culminated in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? That's it. Now you know. That's it. It's very simple. But it's deceptively simple. It's the simplicity of Asara B'Tavis which gives rise to a fascinating halacha, a fascinating halachic debate, let me say more accurately, which gives rise to a fascinating discussion which will not only have halachic implications, but I think more importantly for the purpose of today's shiur, has profound hashkafic and mussar lessons for us all. And I want to use as a springboard for that a well-known but very controversial position that is quoted from the Rishonim in source number 4. Let's give you some background. The Gemara tells us, the Rambam Paskins, and we know this from our experience, that if in theory a fast day should fall out on Shabbos, other than Yom Kippur, we would never fast on Shabbos. When do we fast? We push it to Sunday. Right? We're not Makdim in Puranusa, we're Ma'achr in Puranusa. Right? But we wouldn't fast on Shabbos. Right? Other than Yom Kippur, which is Doraisa, Shabbos Shabboson, but all these fasts which are from the Nevi'im, the Derabbanan, they're not going to be Docha Shabbos. Shabbos is meant for dips. Oneg, and there's we all know now in today's generation, there's no oneg without a dip. Only one dip. Ooh, what kind of person are you? Multiple dips, right? And oneg Shabbos and simcha and shalom bayis. That's Shabbos. You can't do that if you're fasting. Shabbos always beats out a fast day. That's the halacha. We all know this. As it so happens, in our modern calendar, which is quite ancient, but wasn't the original conception. We know the original conception of Jewish time. You couldn't prepare, right? When people would ask, as we do in our world, you know, are the Yom Tovim early this year? They're later this year? That's a whole, originally, the biblical and the Daraisa vision of Judaism, the whole, none of those conversations are going to happen because you never knew. Because everything was, depends. When did the witnesses see the new moon? It was always, you know, it wasn't a huge range of possibilities, but it wasn't predictable, completely unpredictable. So it comes along the calendar for all sorts of historical necessities. We don't have the Adim anymore. We have a calendar, which is unbelievable, the mathematics that went into that so many centuries ago are mind-boggling how sophisticated and brilliant that has turned out to be. But we know calendarically, Asar B'Tavis, which is of course our topic, cannot fall on Shabbos. Cannot fall on Shabbos. It can fall on Friday. It cannot fall on Shabbos. However, before, if you know, in that window of time, after the first Beis HaMikdash, but before there was a calendar instituted, in theory, if witnesses came this month on that day, that month on that day, it could easily come out that Asar B'Tavis could have been on Shabbos. So it's a hypothetical in our world. But let me ask you a hypothetical question. If Asar B'Tavis would fall out on Shabbos, what do you think the din should be? And the answer would seem to be obvious. You would fast on Sunday, right? Tisha B'Av, we don't fast on Shabbos, right? What me God only Tisha B'Av. So that's perfectly logical. And in fact, as we shall see in a few moments, that's the majority view. But it's not the only view. And as something that I'm sure you know in your own Torah studies, something that I certainly highlight to my students and my balabatim, I'm also Rabbi Bashul. You know, it's the out of the mainstream shitot, which are often not only the most interesting, but what is really key, if you can unlock the door, is that often those out of the mainstream Shitos, not only do they have a different way of looking at things, even though their actual psak may be completely different than everyone else, but often it's dafka the out of the ordinary, out of the mainstream Shita, which actually provides a conceptual and a philosophical window into the entire sugya. And I think that's an example here. So with that introduction, take a look, if you could, at source number 4. This is the Beis Yosef, none other than of Yosef Karo. His magnum opus, by the way, was not the Shulchan Aruch, at least not if you asked him. It's an interesting thing, P.S. You know how this, you know, everything needs mazel, and none of us can predict, you know, just think in our own lives. You know, what's going to be our legacy? Right? Hopefully we have, each of us have more than one candidate for that answer. And it could be that we could predict how we'll be remembered in 100 years. But there's a good chance that what you think is your legacy may be wonderful. But you may end up having a greater impact in some other area you don't even imagine. So this is just a small example of that curiosity of human experience. Rav Yosef Karo was convinced that the Shulchan Aruch was a PS, an afterthought. It was cliff notes to his magnum opus. His magnum opus is the Beis Yosef, which is an unbelievable scholarly accomplishment. The Tur, which was the first real modern style code of halacha, the idea which we're all familiar with of dividing up halacha into four sections, or Chaim and Yoredeh, all that was created by the Tur, the son of the Rosh, later Rishon. But he added some level of detail. But you don't really know where everything's coming from. You don't have a whole history of the sugya. So came along Rav Yosef Karo, 500 years ago or so, and wrote a humongous research project. Massive, just mind-boggling to consider what he was able to accomplish. You know, there were no Google searches. There was no Barilan CD-ROM. Just unbelievable, giving you the backstory of every single sugi in halacha so you understand why the Tur gave the psak that he gave, and more often, I wouldn't say more often, but very often, the Shulchan Aruch himself, I'm calling the Shulchan Aruch, that was my bad, Rav Yosef Karo, actually disagrees. But even when he doesn't disagree, all of a sudden you now know, okay, these were the Gemaras, they're the different positions, and that's why the Torah said what he said. After that humongous work, which maybe, if you're a Smicha student, you use nowadays, but nobody else does, says the Shulchan Aruch, you know, people got to know what to do, so I'll make my kitzer, my cliff notes. We'll call that Shulchan Aruch. Of course, you know, little did he know, I don't think he could have possibly expected, that that became, you know, one of the top 10 most important works in all of Jewish history. It's for hundreds of years defined what it means to be a religious Jew. Are you a Shulchan Aruch Yid? Okay, but just as an aside, it's inconceivable that he would have thought that that would have been his legacy compared to the intellectual output he put in to Beis Yosef. This was just the cliff notes to it. So be that as it may, in the context now of our topic, fast days, Asar B'Tavis, so I've just told you, what does the Beis Yosef do? He collects all of the different literature and different opinions of Rishonim, not always to agree, just to give you the full story, just like you guys come to a shir to understand a topic better. So the Beis Yosef says, don't just read the Torah, I'll give you the backstory. You'll understand the topic from a broader and deeper perspective. And in that context, source number 4 says the Beis Yosef, he quotes one of the somewhat more esoteric Rishonim, not as well known. Actually, my Rebbe, Rav Rosenzweig, used to refer to these as the exotic Rishonim. But not as well known. The Rav David Avudraham, very well known in limited areas usually to Rabbonim. He focuses a lot on the Siddur, and Yomim Tovim, and Orchaim type things. So the Beis Yosef here quotes to Avudraham, who says the following. Source number 4. Asara B'Tavis hu Meshuna Mishar Tanios. It's unique from all fasts. Shemhaya Chal B'Shabbos? Again, it doesn't in our modern calendar. But theoretically, if it would fall on Shabbos, L'hoyu Yecholim L'Tchoso L'Yom Acher. We wouldn't push it off. Asara B'Tavis, ironically, the least well-known, the least appreciated, the fast that's all out there on its own in the middle of the winter, that fast has a chumrah that no other fast would have. We would fast on Shabbos, we would not push it off till Sunday. It's a pella. Where does he know that from? So he tells you. B'nei Shenemar, he quotes source number 3, the Pasuk in Yechezkel. What is the phrase that the Navi uses? Be'etzem hayom hazeh. Thank you, Rabbi Wallach. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. It's a weird phrase. It's not necessary. It's repeated twice. Who knows what that harkens to? Who knows Chumash well enough to know what does that remind us of? Yom Kippur. Which, even if you didn't know Chumash well enough, he says in the next words. Right? Be'etzem hayom hazeh kimo b'yom ha'kippurim. End quote. So just like Yom Kippur is Be'etzi Yom Hazeh, it has to be the 10th of Tishrei no matter what, even if that's Shabbos. Says the Avudraham. Since it says Be'etzi Yom Hazeh Yecheskel regarding Asar B'Tevis, it also has to be on that day. It cannot be moved. No Nidcha. It's always going to be on Shabbos. Now, at the end of that quote, Rav Yosef Karo, with severe understatement, he adds a few words. Lo yedati minayin lo zeh. Now, he doesn't mean, I don't know where he got it from. He just told you where he got it from. But he basically, it's a way of saying, who gave him the authority to do that? Where do you get that from? It's nice to be the Avudraham, but even if he was the Rambam, and he wasn't, you can't just make up a din. There's no Gemara that said it. The Bidocha Shabbos? But that's the opinion of the Avudraham. Now, it's an extreme shita. It's not just extreme. It's probably wrong, in the sense that if you take a look at sources number 5 and 6, both Rashi and the Rambam disagree. That's pretty stiff competition to go against both Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi is talking in a different sugya. The Daf Yomi people will get up to it by the end of the coming week in Megillah on Daf Hey. But Rashi there is discussing the general idea of fast days being pushed off because of Shabbos. And Rashi adds in source number 5, what's an example of a fast day that would be pushed off? Rashi adds, it's not in the Gemara. So if you're doing Daf Yomi this week, don't get confused. You're not going to see it. Rashi adds it. Rashi shtups it. He puts it on his own. Ula Asar B'Tevis. Asar B'Tevis also will be pushed off. Now, I don't have to ask where Rashi got it from. This is logical. Why wouldn't it be? All the other fast days are also pushed off. So yeah, it's Asar B'Tevis. Sure enough, the Rambam says the same thing. The Rambam doesn't mention Asar B'Tevis by name because he doesn't have to. Says the Rambam, source number 6, any of the 4 fasts, echad me'arba yemei hatzomos, shechal dios b'shabbos, dochen oso ad la'achar Shabbos. So the Rambam is clear that Asar B'Tevis is not going to be any more strict, any more machmir than Tisha B'Av or Tisha B'Av Asar B'Tamos, nor would any of us expected it to be. Right? The Rambam and Rashi make a ton of sense. And yet we have this outlier, Shita, of the Avudraham. So again, Meheri Yabana Hamigdash, that's a separate question if we're even going to be fasting then. It's an interesting question. You ever think about that? Did they fast on Tisha B'Av during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash? Did they mourn the first Beis Hamikdash during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash? Interesting question. It's not an obvious answer to that question. Not clear at all. So I still don't know what's going to be the time of the third Beis Hamikdash. But in theory, if we would have had the Shaila Halacha L'Maisa and you would ask Rabbi Axel or Rabbi Schechter, and if you move to Rabbi Chemish and you want to ask me your Shailas, no one would say, yes, let's paskin like this Avudraham against Rashi and the Rambam, right? And the Shulchan Aruch, by the way, doesn't bring it even down. We're not surprised. But it is out there. It's out there. And something that I always learned from my great Rebbeim is whether it's the Havamina in a Sugya or even the more outlier sheet, as I alluded to before, those need serious study. Not only because it's the Mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but because very often it's in those more out of the mainstream sheetos in which we can glean sometimes very, very profound insight. And what I'd like to do with you for the remainder of the shiur, again, not to try to convince you that this is correct, halachically, most likely not, but try to understand where he's coming from. Why would he have said that? Beyond just telling me, well, technically it says Be'etzi Yom Hazeh. What is that telling me? Don't be satisfied with a superficial answer. Let's try to dig a little deeper, both halachically, and I want to spend especially the final part of the shiur hashkafically. What lesson is the Avudraham teaching us? Whether we passing like him or not, what is the message of his shita, which I will, as I've already hinted at, but let me be even more explicit now. I think the message of his shita, whether we passing like him or not, is really the message of Asar B'Tevis. Why would he say such a thing? Why would you think Asar B'Tevis of all fasts, more machmir than Tisha B'Av, fasting on Shabbos? Doesn't make any sense. So, there are a number of halachic answers, some of them technical. For example, in source number 7, I won't read it inside, but the Or Sameach, or famed Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, he suggests that he doesn't ask why Asar B'Tevis as opposed to Shiva Asar B'Tamos or Tisha B'Av, even from Gedalia theoretically. But what he does ask is halachically, how is it allowed? If I have a chiyuv to eat and drink and enjoy Shabbos, how could I possibly fast? So he gives a technical answer to that question. He says the halacha that it's usher to fast on Shabbos, that you have to eat, you have to enjoy yourself, that's only violated if you fast for 24 hours. So Tisha B'Av, which starts at night and goes till the end of the next day, that really would be a violation of fasting on Shabbos. But since Asar B'Tevis, as we all know, doesn't just end early, it starts late. It starts in the morning. And in New York, that's really sunrise is quite late. Right? So since we're only fasting a few hours during the day, from what is it now? About 7 o'clock or something like that, till when does it say? It's 5 something? 5 o'clock? Or earlier even? I don't know when in New York it is. I'll be on a plane. But first of all, you should have Rachmanis on me that I'm flying Asar B'Tevis. But don't worry, I'm flying eastward. I don't know exactly when the fast will end, but it's not going to go forever. If I was flying westward, it would be the fast that would never end. But I'm coming from L.A. eastward on Asar B'Tevis. I go from here to the airport to go to Los Angeles, and on Tuesday I'll be flying not all the way back to New York, but at least eastward. But, says the Or Sameach, technically there's no problem in fasting, you know, from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. on a Shabbos. Not that any of us would do it, but the real Isser, the prohibition would be to fast 24 hours. So that's his technical answer why it's not a violation of Hilchos Shabbos. But what the Or Sameach is not answering at all is, okay, so it's not Usser. That doesn't tell me why I should do it. It doesn't tell me why we don't say that about Shavuos or Batamas. That's also not a 24-hour fast, the way we pass Paskin. So that's one question. One answer, I should say. The more well-known and more popular halachic answer, which I'll share with you before we get to the hashkafic part, is suggested by a number of the great achronim, a number of the gedolei achronim. It's brought down even the name of Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna, the Binyan Shlomo, and I gave it to you in source number 8 in the Minchas Chinuch. All three of these great gedolei achronim all basically say the same thing. Source number 8, and it all goes back to that pasuk, which I couldn't fit on the sheet, I didn't put it on your sheet, but it's the pasuk we began the shir with. That all four of these fast days that commemorate and memorialize the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, how are they referred to? Not by the day of the month, but by the month itself. Som HaRevi'i, Chamishi. So again, it's just, again, most of us, if we bothered to think about it, we just think it's curious, and then we just move on with our day. Right? So these achronim said, no, that's just weird. Why would the Navi do that? Why would Tanakh do that? It must be a reason. And these achronim, including the Minchas Chinuch and source number 8, they have an incredible chiddush, which most of us probably would not otherwise be familiar with. Take a look, we'll read a little bit of source number 8 inside. Says the Minchas Chinuch, the Dalid Somos Halalu Midivre Kabbalah, these four fasts that are mentioned in the Nevi'im, Ein Nikva Lehem Yom Yuchad. In fact, the Takana of the Nevi'im was not for a specific date. Not at all. Teves or Tespa'av Uchadoma. Any of these fast days, Yud B'Teves or Tes. No. Rather, what is it? Worth underlined. Rak HaDivre Kabbalah, what were the Nevi'im instituting? Al Elu Hachadoshim. The Takanas HaNevi'im is to fast in Tammuz, in Av, in Teves, and in Tishrei, any day you want in that month. That's why it's Som HaRevi. The Ikar is the fourth month, or the fifth month, or the seventh month, or the tenth month. Unbelievable chiddush. Teves, Tammuz, Av, Tishrei, Mechuyavim, Lisanus, Mehem, Yom Echad. One day in the month you have to fast, commemorating those events, commemorating the Korban. Avalo Nesiyached Yom Yuchad. Here, Minchas Chinuch. What a chiddush. There was no takana to fast on Tisha B'Av. There's no takana to fast on Asar B'Tevis or Tzom Gedalia or Shavuos or Batamas. Rather, he says, Eize Yom Shirotze, pick a day, Yuchal Hisanos, Rak Be'el Chadashim, just as long as it's in that month. Wow. Says the Minchas Chinuch and these other achronim, that was true for three of the four. In that original pasuk we started, the Navi Zechariah mentions all four fasts. But what's the game changer? Source number 3 that we saw already. The Navi Yecheskel, because what does he say? Be'etzem hayom hazeh. Says the Minchas Chinuch and these other achronim, if I only had the Navi Zechariah, I would assume that Asar B'Tevis is no different. But because the Navi Yecheskel says be'etzem hayom hazeh, it has to be that day. So then, it wasn't a takana to fast somewhere in Teves, but a takana specifically to fast Asar B'Tevis. So, let me just finish the thought. So in light of that, so now let's just close the loop. Again, I think it's intuitive what I'm about to say, but just to make sure we're all on the same page. And therefore, says the Minchas Chinuch, And this is the part, I won't read it inside, but this is the end of the source, which you see underlined. Now we understand the Avudraham. When it comes to the other fasts, of course it's not going to Doche Shabbos. Of course we're going to push off the fast day. Why? Because you don't have to fast on that day anyway. Any day in the month. So why should you pick Shabbos? Pick a different day. But when it comes to Asar B'Teves, so the Navi himself, the Navi, with Ruach HaKodesh, with Nevuah, tells me Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh. It's not Stam a day in Teves. It's Dafka, the 10th of Teves. Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh. Okay, so now that's clearly qualitatively superior to the other fast days, where it's not really the day, it's Dafka, the month. Here, it's Dafka, the day. So that's going to override Shabbos, just like by Yom Kippur. It says Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh. You might have thought sometime in Tishrei. I have to, you know, mitar myself, mechaper. No, Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh, Yom Kippur, Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh. So when the Avudraham quoted that pasuk about Yom Kippur, we didn't know what, you know, okay, it's a nice little tushdel, okay, he knows Tanakh. But what does it mean? So say these achronim, now you know what it means. The chiddush is that, which mind-blowing if you didn't know this before, that there was no such takana of Nevi'im to fast on Tisha B'Av. Not on Shiva Sabbat Tammuz. The takana was fast in Tammuz, in Av, in Tishrei. But Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh, but Tevis is different. There it has to be a Asar B'Teves, and therefore it's even going to be Docha Shabbos. Yes? Did I answer? Okay, good. Okay, so now, this is a halachic answer. I think it's a very sharp answer. Very compelling in a halachic sense. I think, you know, I like it much more, if I can say so, than the Or Sameach's answer. But what it doesn't explain for us, what does this not help us yet understand? Don't be bashful. I heard someone say it. Why? Okay, shkoyach. Again, it takes a genius like the Minchas Chinuch and Reb Chaim Mibrisk to put it all together and to bring our attention to it. What it doesn't explain is why should it be? Why? And it's not just stam why. Like whenever you have, you know, if we could all chazur our Sesame Street bikias, you know, one of these things is not like the other. Right? That's always a very captivating question. But it's more than that. If I had to pick one, which would have been different? Who here would have voted for Asar B'Teves? Oh, come on.
A day for my birthday.
Right? No one would have picked Asar B'Teves. It's the least likely candidate for such special attention. And yet, paradoxically, it's the one that is singled out, even from the Nevi'im, was considered the most important. It can't budge. It has to be on the 10th of Teves. That we don't know an answer for. So I'd like to use the remaining time to share with you a few different possible suggestions, and then my own suggestion, which is that they're all actually really one answer. Okay? Now, the most well-known approach to this question, okay, I want to make sure we're all on the same page. We now know the what, or even the why with a lowercase w, if you will, but I want to know the ultimate why. Why would Asar B'Teves be different? So now we have one answer halachically, from the Minchas Chinuch and others, because Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh is different. The other fast days were on the month. This is Dafka on the day. Shkoich. Why was that the case? So you don't ask me, why did Yechezkel say it? He told him because Hashem said it. But why would Hashem tell Yechezkel to tell us Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh? So the most well-known answer to this question, which I think is incredibly important, and we really should meditate on it because it has such profound lessons for our lives, is an answer that is given by more than one thinker, but perhaps most well known in source number 9 in the Sefer B'nai Yisachar. B'nai Yisachar is one of the great and early Hasidic works, known as by the Dinever, and this is on the months, as you can see in the title there. This is on Kislev Teves. He gives Hasidic insights into the nature of the months and the events in the different months. You know, most Hasidic Svarim, for those of you familiar, most Hasidic Svarim, not all, but most are arranged by Parshios, because most Hasidic masters didn't write books. They spoke at Shal Shudas, and then people wrote up the books on the Parsha. But this is an example of someone who actually wrote a Sefer, and he used the calendar as the basis to give insights. So the B'nai Yisachar, for those who are interested, Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, the great, very non-Hasidic genius, he also has a similar idea in his Droshos Ya'aros Dvash, and they both make the following point. What seems to be the weakness of Asar B'Teves, properly appreciated, actually is its strength, or it highlights why it's so important. Leave aside the mazel of the calendaric point, which is like we don't appreciate it because it's just stam in the middle of the winter that we already mentioned. But even if you thought about it more deeply, and we went through the events that are described, the events of Asarah B'Teves seem to be the least important. What happened on Asarah B'Teves? If you were a Jew living in Yerushalayim, from the 9th of Teves to the 11th of Teves, how did your life change? The answer is probably not at all. Outside the wall. Eventually there was no food. 2.5 years. But when they began the siege on Asarah B'Teves, nothing really. Breaking through the walls of Yerushalayim, that's something. Burning the base of Midrash, of course, is something. They thought that maybe there's a chance to have a quick recovery. Gedaliah is assassinated. That's it. Chorban is final. Those are real things. Can you imagine? I mean, most of the people in the room are old enough to remember the second time in Jewish history when a Jew killed another Jewish leader. Right? It's traumatic. But Asarah B'Teves, says the Bnei Yisachar, that's exactly the point. If you take a look a few lines down, what's underlined? Nira dechach mehador lamduhu midivri hanavi shamar behanavua chumras tzom ha'asiri. Why? That's even being well to docha Shabbos, etc. Why? Aval hu liyo zehayom haya ischalta de paranusa biyom samach melach bavel v'tzar alav ir hakodesh Hashem Yisbarach. Hopefully one day you have full l'sasson l'simcha. Says the Bnei Yisachar, you know what is dafka, the chumra, the seriousness, the importance of Asarah B'Teves? Dafka, that it's the beginning. En hachanami. At that moment, maybe nothing had happened. But the start of a process is the tone setter. How we start something determines ultimately its direction. En hachanami, in and of itself, if it had been totally disjointed, disjunct from totally disconnected, should I say, from any other process, the events of Asarah B'Teves might not have been anything. But they were the beginning of a process. And retroactively, if you ask, where did it all go wrong? The answer is Asarah B'Teves. And to remind us of the importance of the beginning of something, the beginning of a process, the ischalta, not of Geula, but Ischalta of Paranusa, that was Asarah B'Teves. And says the Bnei Yisachar, he has a great raya for this. Some of you may know this Gemara, you may learn it on Tisha B'Av, right? The Gemara tells us, and he actually quotes it a few lines above what I was reading, that Rabbi Yochanan said, had I been alive during the time of the Churban, I would have said it's not Tisha B'Av, but Asarah B'Av. Why? Because when the Gemara, again, this is for the Daf Yomi people, we're just learning it, when the Gemara describes the events of the Churban, the fire was lit in the Beis HaMikdash on the 9th of Av, but the Gemara is clear that when was most of the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Yeah. Not until the 10th. The Beis HaMikdash was still standing, and it wasn't in a good situation on the 9th. Excuse me, but on the 10th is when it was destroyed. So says Rabbi Yochanan, no less than Rabbi Yochanan. It should be the 10th of. So how come the rest of the Chachamim didn't agree with him? How come the rest of the Chachamim said, no, the 9th? Says the Gemara, this is the phrase, Ischalta de Puranusa. Because the Iker is the beginning. Again, in theory, had Hatzalah come and put out the fire, then the beginning would have been nothing. But if in the end it leads to a destruction, more traumatic than when it was actually destroyed was when the fire started. That's in the microcosm, in the moment of destruction. If you zoom out, what's even more important than when they began the fire? When they laid siege. Ischalta de Paranusa. That is the significance. Dafka, what we overlook in Asarah B'Teves, is Dafka. That itself is what we're supposed to hopefully be contemplating and appreciating. The importance of beginnings. And if you think about it for a moment, this is a tremendous gewaltig musar for all of us. In anything we do, it could be a new job, a new relationship, a young couple, shana rishona, etc. There's so many examples. Right? There's no guarantees, right? None of us are naive enough to think there's guarantees about anything in life. But you're in a significantly better place when you start off on the right foot. Right? That's a tone setter. I happen to be very, very fond of sports. I like to give excuses. It's because I have three sons or I teach teenage boys, but they're all just excuses. I love sports. And anyone who knows sports, whether it's, you know, basketball or football, right? You get the ball, the first drive, it's a tone setter. Who's getting the ball at the beginning of the second half? Right, that could change the whole game if you get that one right. That doesn't mean you're going to lose. You could always come back anyway. But everyone, they always talk about, you know, those great chachamim on TV. They always talk about it, and they're right. Ischalta, the way you start something, the way you start the marriage, the way you start the new job, the way you start the new day, year in school, that first day, it sets a tone. And we are all familiar with this in the mirror image of this. Ischalta de geula. Right? You could say, listen, look how imperfect everything is. Do we really have the geula shlema? Look at all the problems in Israel. The only thing worse than dealing with the Palestinian problem and the Iranian problem is all our internal problems. To solve those, far more complicated than figuring out what to do with Iran. Do we really have everything we want? Look at all the problems. It's easy to be a naysayer. I mean, we're Yidden. We're very good at it. So why do we nevertheless celebrate and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu profusely for the gift of the modern state of Israel? Because if nothing else, at least it's the Ischalta. Now, of course, if it doesn't, Chas V'Shalom, end up becoming the Geula Shleima, it will lose a lot of its taste. There's no doubt about that. Let's be honest. But if, whether it takes another 5 years, 10 years, or 50 or 500 years, I'm not a novice. I have no idea when it's going to happen. But if this is a process which eventually culminated in the Geula Shleima, would you poo-poo what happened in 1948? Adarabba. It's Ischalta de Geula. And that is as significant as Asar B'Tevis was Ischalta de Parnassah. Don't poo-poo beginnings. Adarabba. They set a tone, and if Rachmana Litzlan, it's bad. You ask anybody if they or they had a relative who passed away from a serious illness. The most traumatic day, if you ask them, the day of the diagnosis. They might still feel fine. A very close friend of our family's was actually the wife, the Rebbetzin, when I was a child of the shul I grew up in. She had no symptoms. She had something else. But because she had to go to the doctor for something else, they just found, Rachmana Litzlan, a very, very lethal cancer that she has to deal with now. She doesn't feel any different now than she did the day before. And I hope, I pray, and I will daven that she'll have her full shleima. But nothing that can happen going forward is going to be as traumatic as when she got that news. I've heard this from many, many people who went through it themselves or with their family or their parents, because that's a schalta de paranusa. That's the first lesson for us. The significance of the beginning. That's what Asar Tevis is coming to remind us of. To appreciate the power of beginnings. I want to add a second and third short points that I think that they really are going to enhance and can complement what we've seen until now. Rav Lichtenstein, Zatzal, in a beautiful, beautiful sicha that he had given on Asar B'Tevis in the yeshiva in Gush, and it's now written up both in Hebrew and in English on the Gush VBM website. So he had a slightly different take on this. He asked the same kind of questions that we're asking. He had a slightly different take. And he highlighted, not necessarily beginnings, but small things and root causes. It's easy to be dismissive of small things. But said of Lichtenstein, what Asar B'Tevis is intended to teach us is that once you see that something is significant, don't settle on diagnosing the symptom. Try to, if you can, we can't always do it. This is an avoda in retrospection. This cannot be done prospectively. But it's important to be able to look back, not just at beginnings, that's what we said until now, he had a slightly different take. What are the small things that added up to the big thing? And I think that this is also an obvious and very relevant and powerful mussar. Whether it's success or, unfortunately, like in this case, destruction or failure, very, very, very rarely does that happen in one fell swoop Or is there one major event which everything can be attributed to? There are usually lots of small seeds of destruction or baby steps that led to great success. Again, this is true in the business and for-profit world. Recently, one of my friends got me hooked on a very, very popular podcast by Guy Raz from PBS, all about startups and entrepreneurship. And obviously, if you're having an incredibly professional podcast being made about your professional career, it's because you were part of that 1% who was actually successful. He doesn't do profiles on the 999 people who tried and were failed. And we understand why. That wouldn't be interesting for any of us to listen to. But the amazing thing, again, he interviews, it's one of the top, I think, podcasts in the world, very professionally done. He interviews people that we've all heard of, very famous people. And there's all sorts of other people whose bank accounts are quite successful now, but we might never have heard of. And their stories are often very, very different and fascinating. But there's one Sat HaShaveh in any one of these great entrepreneurial stories. It started very, very small, often with lots of failure. Drip, 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 boom. Years of no success or small success and persistence is true, lahavdil, in most, not all, most even non-for-profit ventures. Rabbi Axelrod mentioned this organization I'm working with, Salash. We're now in our ninth year. Kanai and her, we're growing like crazy. I only joined a few months ago. I'm very proud to be part of it now. But the founder, the tzaddik who founded the organization, our parents Einhorn, was doing it by himself for 4 years, drip, 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 then hired one person to work with him, drip, drip, drip. And just in the last two years, boom, Kanai and her, we're growing like crazy now. Small things, persistence, being able to identify what were those small steps in cases of success, halavai, being able to identify those. And unfortunately, in failure, right? I often do in my capacity as a shorav, marriage counseling. It's very rare in a case of a distressed marriage that there was one big event. And even if there was, it came after lots of small ones. And it's true, lahavdil, and all the happy and successful things that we've done in our relationships, it's lots and lots, right? It's that's the myth of quality time. It's good to have quality time. It doesn't come close to the importance of quantity time. Right? Lots of small things, consistency. Center of Lichtenstein, the appreciation of the small things, the things that were imperceptible. That's the message of Asara B'Tevis. Again, I asked before, what changed for the Jews of Yerushalayim from the 9th to the 11th? At the moment, it was nothing. Some bad news. It's like now, you open up the news, bad news in Israel, unfortunately. Bad news for the Yidden. And then we move on with our day and we see if the Knicks lost again or something like that. Right? At the time, it wasn't good news, obviously, that there's a siege. But it didn't affect anything. It was a small thing in the scheme of things. So you can't compare it to the, cataclysmic events of the breach of the walls of Yerushalayim or the fire of the Beis Hamikdash. But the answer is, in hindsight, the seeds of destruction were sown with lots of small steps. Just like in all of our lives, in our religious life, in our professional life, in our personal lives, the seeds of our great successes are all the small steps. It can't be mezalzel on the small things. You have to understand what led up to it. And last but not least, if you'll indulge me with a few more minutes, and with this then we'll bring it to an end. I saw a third approach, but I really want to tie them all together because I think it's so important. And that is, some of you may have heard in the news just a few weeks ago, one of the most underappreciated, if Asara B'Tevis is the most underappreciated fast, one of the most underappreciated Gedolei Hador of the last generation or so, just passed away. Somebody named Rav Shlomo Fischer, Zatzal. He was a Gaon Adir. He came from a Yerushalmi family. If you saw him, certainly on Shabbos, he was wearing a strimel and a bekasha, but he was totally an out-of-the-box thinker. The real Kanai Yerushalayim didn't accept him because he's too open-minded. He used to visit many different Hesder yeshivot. He actually has a daughter, still alive, Solzhan Gazut, who married a genius 40 whatever years ago from the Gush Kolel. So for years, he used to come to Gush and spend the Shabbos. Rav Lichtenstein was very close with him. And since we all understand the Gadol Hador, who Rav Lichtenstein was, one of my friends who was in Shir, one of the times that Shlomo Fischer spent a Shabbos, he used to spend Shabbos in Gush because his daughter was there. And he said that Rav Aaron came into Shir after that Shabbos, and he says, it's rare to know a person who mamish knows Kol Torah Kula inside and out. So Rav Lichtenstein, to have his breath taken away, you can only imagine the magnitude of the genius of Rav Shlomo Fischer. Also creative, out of the box. He knew philosophy. Secular professors from Hebrew used to consult him on medieval philosophy. He knew everything. The genius, Sheva geniuses, a tzaddik and a nistar. But he wasn't involved in politics. He never condemned anybody. So why should we know his name? He just sat and learned, taught Torah, wrote Svarim. So in his magnum opus, the Beis Yishai, just passed away. I think if I'm not mistaken, he was 89, something like that. Anyway, he had a nice life. Baruch Hashem, halavai we could have more years from him. So in his Sefer Beis Yishai, again, I won't get into all the details of how he proves it, but he has a very creative chiddush. He suggests that with the chumrah of Asar B'Tavis, he says, really, there are three main events or fast days that are really the ones that directly relate to the destruction, right? Tzom Gedalia is the thing that happened afterwards. But Asar B'Tavis, Shavasar B'Tamas, and Tisha B'Av. He says there were three cataclysmic sins of the Jewish people throughout history. And they correspond, he suggests, to these dates. Right? What happened on Shiva Asar B'Tamuz? Chet HaEgel, says the Gemara. What happened on Tisha B'Av? Chet HaMeraglim. The Bechiya B'Lechinam became the Bechiya L'Doros. So what happened on Asar B'Tavis? You know, in the origin story. So he suggests the third and the first of the great sins of the Jewish people, Mechiras Yosef. It's a chiddush atzum. I can't tell you for sure he's right. Even he can't say for sure he's right. But he has some suggestion and proofs to make this point. It's a chiddush only he has said, as far as I know, any first time in Jewish history anyone made that chiddush, they made that claim, even though he has proofs. But they're speculative. I think even he would have admitted that. He suggests that Mechiras Yosef took place on Asar B'Tavis. The three cataclysmic events that have rocked the Jewish people for all history, Mechiras Yosef, Chet HaMeraglim, and Chet HaEgel, in that order, correspond, he suggests, in chronological order, in the same sequence. What came first? Asar B'Tavis, Mechiras Yosef. Then you have the Chet HaEgel, Asar B'Tavis, Shiva Asar B'Tamas, and then you have the Meraglim and Tisha B'Av. Now, if he's right, what comes out of all this? That yet again, what rears its ugly head on Asar B'Tavis? Sinas Chinam. The inability for Jews to remember that we're really brothers and sisters, to put family and loyalty first above selfish and petty interests. We're familiar with that story on Tisha B'Av. We speak about it in Kamsa Bar Kamsa and Sinas Chinam, the second base of Mikdash. Comes along with Shlomo Fischer with an unbelievable chiddush. The root of it all is Mechiras Yosef, that everyone knows. And the root of that, he says, is Asara B'Tavis. Now, aside from that mind-blowing chiddush in and of itself, what I want to suggest is that really all these things go together. In that, unfortunately, one of the great Yetzer Haras that most of us, for all of Jewish history, have suffered from, the reason I think, obviously, we keep on perpetuating the sin of Sinas Chinam is because we actually don't appreciate that there's anything wrong, really, with Sinas Chinam. It was the beginning of everything, and we don't take beginning seriously. And most importantly, connected to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein had said before about the small things. Come on. A guy doesn't keep Chol of Yisrael. Like, it's terrible. Somebody, you know, maybe did, he ate on Yom Kippur. That really is terrible. But he's mean to other people, he's intolerant, Sinas Chinam. We dafka think of that as the ultimate small thing. And by the way, that's not my insight. Among many others who made that point, source number 10, with this we conclude, is Rav Yisrael Salanter, in his famous Igeres HaMusar. He points out that the chumrah of the second Churban, even more than the first. I mean, it's a pella. I talk about this every year when I do my keynote presentation for YU on Tisha B'Av, right? The first base of Mikdash has destroyed the big three. The second base of Mikdash, Sinas Chinam. The very fact that they could even be remotely equivalent is mind-boggling to us. But it's not just that, as the Gemara itself points out. Which one is more severe? Only 70 years to rebuild the first base of Mikdash. We're still reeling from the second. Evidently, Sinas Chinam was even worse. Well, why? So there's different theories behind that. But one of the theories, which is, other people have said this aside from him. The Ben Ish Chai says this. But here I give it to you, source number 10 from the Igeres HaMusar of Shoslant. He says, you know what it means that Sinas Chinam is worse? It's worse in the sense that because no one is machshivit as an Aveira, so who does tshuva for it? Says Rav Yisrael Salanter, when you, Nebuch, if you do Ritzicha, Gili Arayas, Shvichas Damim, even if you had a Yetzahara and you did it, you murdered someone, Rachman al-Islam, you had adultery, Rachman al-Islam, you had a Yetzahara, you had a Taiva, but people feel guilty about it. They know it was wrong, but they did it anyway, we're human. But whoever felt guilty about Sinas Chinam? Raise your hand if you, in anyone in this room, were you ever over Sinas Chinam? None would ever admit it. First of all, because I don't hate anyone. Second of all, if I was, it wasn't Chinam, I'll tell you that. He deserved that. That was not Sinas Chinam. It's impossible virtually to do tshuva for Sinas Chinam because we never think we were over it. And even if we were, come on, it's not a big deal. I put on a bit of Tom Tefillin. What are you talking about? I have a 5-minute Shimon Esrei. That's what it means to be frum. Sinas Chinam, it's a small thing. It would be better if I had more Avos Yisrael. But come on, that's what makes somebody religious. We don't think that way. Dafka Sinas Chinam is the ultimate small thing. It's the ultimate root cause that we're mezalzel in. So if you put it all together, I think it's really quite a profound day. It's the day that teaches us about the importance of getting it right from the beginning, about taking the small things seriously, and that ultimately it all comes back to how we treat each other. All these years later, we're all just Yosef's brothers in one form or another. If we could be mitaking that, if we realize that it's not a small thing, it's a big thing. And even if it doesn't bring the geula right away, any relationship you rectify, any extra bit of Avas Yisrael you bring, is an eschalta de geula. If we took that approach, then Emir Hashem, hopefully, as the Pasuk concludes, these days will no longer be that of mourning and avelus, but hopefully one day soon, speedily in our days, they should be days of sason and simcha. Thank you very much.